Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
During this 2020 presidential campaign, we're looking at the various ways to ensure that everyone eligible to vote in this country gets the right to express his, her, or their choice on Election Day. We call it Protect the Vote.
What's your choice? What's your choice?
Today's Protect the Vote segment looks at voting in the South. This Saturday, South Carolina voters will head to the polls, and tonight the remaining Democratic candidates for president will meet on the debate stage, those who were eligible anyway. So many voters, especially voters of color, of which South Carolina has many, often have to face a series of obstacles in order to cast their ballot. Obstacles often designed to keep these communities from voting. We thought this would be a good time for a general overview of the myriad ways that historical methods of voter suppression have continued into the 21st century, even if we call them by different names. And there are a few people better equipped to walk us through these tactics than Gilda R. Daniels. Daniels served as a deputy chief in the voting section of the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice. She worked under both George W. Bush and the Clinton administrations, and she's intimately familiar with voter suppression. She's compiled her extensive knowledge in a book titled Uncounted: The Crisis of Voter Suppression in America, and she argues that while the legislation and tactics may have changed over history, the results of voter suppression are the same. They disproportionately bar people of color from voting, something Gilda knows personally. She tells the story of her grandfather in the introduction of her book.
I start the book by talking about a saying that my grandfather would always say. He would always wake us by saying, "You're sleeping at a dangerous time." And certainly as a child, I did not understand what that meant. Later, certainly realized that he meant we were sleeping while things were happening all around us, and that we needed to awaken to the issues that were around us that, you know, that we certainly need to pay attention to. And so certainly his statements made me realize that we need to pay particular attention, particularly to voter suppression.
So when people think about voter suppression tactics, it might bring to mind Jim Crow for a lot of people. But you have this great chart early on in your book, about page 23, where you talk about voter suppression tools. And I want to go through these, and I'm going to lay them out for our listeners, and then we'll take them one by one.
Okay.
Historically, poll taxes. Contemporary, voter ID. Historically, literacy tests. Contemporary, voter deception. Historically, vouchers. Contemporary, voter purge. Historical, grandfather clauses. Contemporary, racial purges. It's really interesting to think about it this way. So let's start with the idea of voter ID laws.
Okay.
Once upon a time, they were poll taxes. Can you explain that relationship?
One of the points that I make throughout the book is that voter suppression is not new. It doesn't matter essentially what it's being called, mm-hmm. that it's the same tools that are being used for the same purpose, which is to disenfranchise primarily people of color. We certainly know from the beginning of our country that the founding fathers determined who could vote. And essentially at that time, it was white male property owners. After Reconstruction, a number of disenfranchising methods came to bear, and one of those was certainly the poll tax. So the poll tax was used as a way to disenfranchise newly enfranchised blacks after Reconstruction. And they used the poll tax. You had to pay a fee and keep that documentation and present it at a later time, at the time when you were ready to vote, when it was time to vote, when an election was held. Voter ID is very, very similar in that in order to obtain a voter ID, and now we're talking about states that implement restrictive ID, meaning that they only allow certain forms of identification. And those forms are generally government-issued ID, such as a driver's license or a military ID or a passport. And in order to get those documents, you have to have underlying documents such as a birth certificate or your naturalization papers. And to get those documents, you actually have to purchase them. And the time and money that it takes in order to get those underlying documents, as well as to actually obtain these restrictive forms of ID, serve as an unconstitutional poll tax. In Georgia in 2006, when they first implemented their Georgia ID, their voter ID bill, they actually knew that 25% of the African Americans in the state did not have cars. Yet they chose the driver's license as one of the very few forms of identification. So it serves as a bar to actually voting.
So what is the ideal way to verify someone's identity without being unfairly punitive?
The ideal way is to have several forms of identification in order to ensure that the person who is standing before you is the person who is actually voting. In many states, you can use things such as a utility bill. So having several forms or several different ways in which you can verify your identity is optimal.
My guest is Gilda Daniels. The name of her book is Uncounted, The Crisis of Voter Suppression in America. You write that the contemporary version of a grandfather clause is a racial purge. How so?
Certainly in many ways. For example, a grandfather clause, for example, after Reconstruction, again, many of these disenfranchising tools came about after the enfranchisement of formerly enslaved people. The grandfather clause essentially said that if your grandfather did not vote by a particular date, generally the date was before the passage of the 15th Amendment, then you were not eligible to vote. And so today we see what is essentially a racial purge occurring. And I use the term racial purge in the book to discuss what is happening now in the face of changing demographics. Demographers are telling us that the country will be a majority person of color country by 2045. And we see a number of devices that are being used in order to eliminate those persons. And one of them is the proof of citizenship laws, looking at naturalization papers and trying to ensure that persons who were not eligible at some point in their lives because they weren't citizens, making it harder for naturalized citizens to vote is, in my estimation, similar to this grandfather clause and similar to other disenfranchising devices, where if you didn't have this piece of paper, you didn't have this status prior to a particular date, we're going to make it harder for you to, or almost impossible for you to register and participate in the election.
And the last voter suppression tool I want to talk about is you describe voter deception. You liken it to historically literacy tests. How so?
I think voter deception is certainly an issue that we don't talk about enough. We're certainly hearing a lot about misinformation and, you know, fake news. I give examples of students on a campus being told that they didn't need to go to the polls. All they had to do was send a tweet, hashtag Hillary, and that would count as a vote. Or flyers that were being disseminated. And in this instance, it was a mayor on his Facebook page who said that Republicans voted on Tuesday, Democrats voted on Wednesday, would vote on Wednesday. And the actual election day was Tuesday. So this misinformation that's connected to knowledge and being disseminated in a way that eliminates and certainly eliminates certain groups of people from casting ballots.
My guest is Gilda Daniels. The name of her book is Uncounted, The Crisis of Voter Suppression in America. So as you know, we tend to think about black and white racial binary situation, especially around voter suppression. But the Latinx population is growing rapidly. So how are Latinx voters being targeted, particularly in terms of voter suppression?
Latinx voters are being targeted in several ways. One of the ways that I've mentioned is certainly with the proof of citizenship laws. We saw that in Kansas as a primary means of eliminating persons who have become naturalized citizens. But what happens is in the polling places, any person of a certain hue can be challenged. When I was at the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division voting section, we brought a case in Berks County, Pennsylvania, where language assistance was not being provided, which the law required.
So people might be thinking, hold up, we have a Voting Rights Act.
Yes.
We thought we had a Voting Rights Act that protected against voter suppression.
Right.
What happened?
Longstanding discrimination and suppression voting tactics have only increased in the aftermath of the 5-4 Shelby County versus Holder Supreme Court decision in 2013. The ruling did not deny the continued existence of discriminatory voting practices, but it took issue with how the federal government decided which states' voting practices would be subject to federal oversight, and the court ruled that the coverage formula needed to be updated. But since that time, we've had at least 23 states have enacted newly restrictive statewide voter laws, and voters now face an increasingly burdensome and complex array of barriers to exercising their constitutional right to vote. And they don't have the federal government as a force to ensure that their right to vote is being exercised without or being exercised free of discrimination.
So why is North Carolina a good case study?
North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Texas, certainly all are jurisdictions that were previously covered under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which required jurisdictions to submit any voting changes to the federal government for approval prior to implementation. North Carolina is certainly a good example of what life looks like after Shelby County, because the court said that it used surgical precision in determining which disenfranchising devices they would implement in order to eliminate people of color as well as young voters. For example, they determined that they would no longer allow 16, 17-year-olds to register. They looked at the fact that a large percentage of African-Americans went to polling places and enjoyed early voting on Sundays with the Souls to the Polls movement. So after church, would get on buses and go vote. One of the things that the North Carolina legislature did was say we're going to eliminate early voting on Sundays as a means of eliminating the large numbers of African Americans who were voting. And without Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which would have demanded that the state pre-clear or get approval of those changes prior to implementation, the legislature passed the legislation, and then it was years of litigation that ultimately led to the end of those devices. But it's still a fight.
Now, Gil, as someone who's worked under the Bush administration and the Clinton administration, and as we look forward to 2020, what are some solutions? What are some ways that we can all be more aware of voter suppression and how we can fight some voter suppression?
Knowledge is certainly the first issue, because one of the reasons I wrote the book was so that people could read the book and say, okay, I knew something was going on. Now I know what it is. And now I know what I can do about it or what we need to do about it. So educate yourselves about the voting process in your state. Know when the deadlines are, when's the deadline for registration. When does early voting start? Do you have early voting? Do you have same-day registration? Also legislate. Know what legislation is being proposed. A lot of states are in their legislative sessions now. Know what legislation is being proposed that could alter how you register and how you cast a ballot. And litigation is certainly an option in partnering with organizations like Advancement Project. I'm also the director of litigation at Advancement Project, which is a national civil rights organization. But partnering with organizations like Advancement Project to bring litigation when it's necessary. And finally, participating, getting out and voting and recognizing that we can, the Bible says, physician, heal thyself, and we can certainly heal ourselves by doing those things, educating, legislating, litigating, and certainly participating. And we can hopefully bring our country to the place where we are destined to be, where people can exercise the right to vote free and without discrimination.
My guest has been Gilda R. Daniels, former deputy chief in the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division Voting Section. The name of the book is Uncounted, The Crisis of Voter Suppression in America.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.